Well, my daughter-in-law just told me that my grandson, he was almost walking at the age of 1 year, which was in December, and now he's still not walking. And I finally found out today why, because if he doesn't walk, she holds him. Oh, and then I realized, I couldn't believe it. You couldn't in all these months.
Well, you have to walk the children.
Rabbi, what you grow up with, how much I was built on me. That's more than
oh, the, Mishkan, the donation.
Right.
Thank you.
It's hard to do, though.
Okay. So first of all, happy, very happy Purim in advance to everybody. Happy Purim. Happy Purim.
Happy Purim.
Happy Purim. Happy Purim. Now I'm going to be here.
Oh, that's right.
We're going to be doing the family Megillah reading the night of. No. I'm just assisting. I'm making sure nobody gets out of line.
Did you also listen for anybody who's at home?
I've been calling people. Nobody's been calling me.
If you listen for that.
If you know anybody. I've been trying to find people. Problem is that they're at home.
And so they don't get to read that. Yeah, true.
It's boxes. That's interesting.
That's right. Every child. So I want to begin with the a question. There may not be a right answer to this. There might be though. What is? Do people here think that the Megillah has a happy ending, a sad ending, in between ending?
Well, it depends on what you construe to be a happy ending. If you think that it's happy because the Jews are saved, it's happy.
Okay.
If you think that anybody dies makes something sad, then it's a certain absolute.
Ah, very interesting. Okay, so you're saying if you're, you know, and we do mourn sometimes in our tradition for, you know, people who die no matter what. What's a good example of that?
Right.
Yeah,
that's
very good.
The Red Sea.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Naomi and Arthur are saying exactly the same thing, which is that we have a principle that if any of God's creations are suffering, we don't like to rejoice. The question comes up in terms of saying full hallel on Pesach, right. and the halacha is Masa Yadai Tovim Biyam Be'atem Omrim Shira. Hashem says my creatures are going to be drowning in the sea, and you're going to say a full hallel. So that is one element for sure. Susan, that was creative. I didn't think of that. That's very interesting. Okay, very good. Any other answers?
Well, the disturbing thing about Megillah is the lack of intelligence of players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this the king of 127 provinces?
Right.
He was being told what to do. He was a puppeteer.
Correct.
You can see it. I mean, it repeats itself.
In fact, in the Gemara, anybody know the machlokas that Rav and Shmuel have about Arthur's point? Rav and Shmuel have a machlokas about whether Achashverosh was a melech pikeach hava or a melech tipesh. Yeah, Rav Yisrael, very good. Whether he was a melech, whether he was a smart king, or whether he was an unwise king. Right, so Arthur is coming down on the side of... We don't know who says what. It just says Chad Amar v'Chad Amar. But you're in good company. Rav or Shmuel. Can't go wrong. Anybody else want to weigh in on the Megillah as a happy or sad ending? Or
heavy tax.
Heavy tax. What do you make of that tax? Right. So I never knew what to... In other words, who cares about the tax, right? Why is the tax there? Strange, right?
Well, it's good because it brings always joy.
The tax brings joy?
Yes, it takes up.
Wow. That's a very altruistic attitude. Yeah, everybody was giving Obama a hard time about that. And that would have been great if he said in the debate, but you see, the tax brings joy.
Yes,
right. Yeah. Rabbi says so.
I think they would have thrown shoes.
But what about if you consider the Esther's issue with Cyrus?
Right.
And that caused the Jews to go back to Israel. It was in that period of time.
That's true.
If you look at it historically.
That is correct. Yeah. So you're saying the tax was a way to facilitate that? Cause
not the tax, the fact that the story itself promoted the ability of the Jews to return to Eretz Israel.
Oh, okay, so that just makes it a happy...
A happy thing, right.
100%, that there's what I might even call an 11th chapter, which is the Jews' return. We're actually going to talk about that. It's very good. That's very good. So in other words, that might influence whether we see it as happy or sad. Does anybody have any thoughts as to why the tax might be in there? So,
why should we, if we expect a good chapter, why should we have?
I always... What's that?
If you expect a good chapter, so why should you have said?
I think what Rabbi Yisrael is saying is that if you expect good social services, you have to pay taxes. That's what the Europeans say, for sure. That's one day out there. Good night. Rachel, there's the source sheets in the middle. So the tax is very strange. I always thought that one approach to explaining why we might have the taxes listed in the last parak of the Megillah is because, anybody know what Einstein said? We have two Einstein quotations we have to deal with tonight. Einstein said, you know, what's that? I didn't realize originally that he had said it about Megillas Esther, but it's Mukhraf that the pshat is that he said it about Esther, probably, which is that he said that there are very few certainties in the world, and that's death and taxes.
Einstein said that?
But yeah, that was originally an Einstein quote. So I figured then I realized that he's probably saying that about the 10th parak of Esther. There's no real other explanation for why the taxes should be there, other than to prove that, you know, taxes have always been a part of the world. So Einstein again is correct. But if you don't hold like that, and you say that it's possible to have, you know, life without taxes, it's very strange what the taxes are doing there. But again, like Rabbi Yisrael says, if you want a good krepel,
even the
taxes.
Shekels, even the half a shekel is a tax.
The question is whether that's a tax or is that, you know, how do we look at that? But Susan's right. The simple reading is that that's a tax. We have to raise, it's actually this week's part. What do we have to raise the money for? What does that money go for?
The Mishkan.
Public works. Yeah, the Mishkan.
And we're back to that.
That's basically, tax for services. So that's a question that we're going to try to value today. What exactly is the role of the taxes in the end of the Megillah? We always forget about it because it just seems like a little addendum, but I think it's actually a very important point. So let's read the Pesukim, and we'll translate them, and then we'll begin with some of the other sources here on the question of Mordechai and the tragic dimension of Purim. Simon, or... yeah, let's start. Simon will read first, and then maybe we'll go around. Enough sources for everybody.
Okay. Vayasam ha-malach ha-chashbi ra-ushmas al ha-arat v'iyei hayam. Should I translate that?
Yeah, let's do it that way.
Okay, so King Ahasuerus established a tax on the land and the islands in the ocean. V'chol ma'asei takpo v'rato v'arashat g'dulat Mordechai asher givo ha-malach. And all of the actions and stories of Mordechai, Mordechai's greatness, whom the king made great. Halohim k'tubim al Sefer Divrei Hayamim are written in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, the Malchei Madai Paras, for the kingdoms of Madai Paras. I guess they had their own Sefer Divrei Hayamim.
Yeah, they kept their chronicles.
Okay. Ki Mordechai.
By the way, how do we know that they had their own chronicles? Features prominently in the Megillah.
Right.
Yeah, it says they brought the, exactly, Rabbi Schwartz says, yeah.
Ki Mordechai ha-Yehudi, Mishna l'malach ha-Chashbirosh, Mordechai the Jew was the second to Chashbirosh the king, the Gadol ha-Yehudim, and he was big for the Jews. Avratzui l'rov echad, and desirable.
Very good. Yeah, I think that's the best translation.
For most of his brothers. Doresh tov la'amo, he requested good for his nation, v'dimer shalom l'chol zaro, and advocate of peace. For all of
these children. 100%, very, very nicely done. So if I were to ask, is the last pasuk of the Megillah a compliment for Mordechai or an insult? What would you say?
Compliment.
Sounds like a compliment.
Yes.
Sounds like a compliment. That sounds lots of good things. Gadol ha-Yehudim, Ratzui l'rov echav, Doresh tov le'amo, Dover shalom l'chol zaro. These are all positive achievements, accomplishments, and to a certain extent character traits Dover Shalom, that he was a peaceful person, he was a moderate person, he sought reconciliation. And that is clearly the simple reading. And hence, if you look around any elementary school on Purim or thereabouts, the day before, the day after, depends on the school, you'll find young boys, usually, masquerading as Mordechai. Mordechai has a place in our tradition, a lofty place. Mordechai and... What's that? Named Mordechai or dressing up as Mordechai?
Name.
But maybe... Is he going to be dressing up as Mordechai?
Mordechai.
I'm Mordechai. That's very smart. That's very...
6 months?
7 months. Okay, you might have to dress him up. My father is also Mordechai, presumably because, you know, my grandparents thought Mordechai, they also read the Pasuk like Rachel did, and understood that Mordechai was a positive character. Okay. Right, that's actually correct. He was named for his grandfather. Okay, so somebody, right, Susan is right, as usual. So Arthur objects. Arthur objects. I'm taking sides. So somebody somewhere along the line thought that Mordechai was a character who we could admire. Now, this is what I always assumed until one day in eighth grade. I'll never forget it when I first learned the following Gemara. We were learning Megillah that year. I remember being shocked and amazed, and I'm still somewhat shocked and amazed. I don't know that there will be a question. There will be an answer to this question, but at least we should learn the question. The question comes from the Gemara Megillah. It's also found in a Medrash, which is called Yalkut Shimoni, and they have an incredible, in the literal sense of the term, really incredible, hard to believe, reading of this last line in the Megillah Esther. So the Gemara writes as follows: Ki Mordechai haYehudi, Mishne laMelech Achashverosh, Gadol laYehudim, VeRatzoi leRov Echav. The Gemara comments, Liro Bechav, as Simon said exactly right, for the majority of his brethren, Vilo Lecholachav, but this was not unanimous support for Mordechai. Mordechai had some very serious detractors. Milamed, this teaches us, Shepirshu Mimenu Miktas Sanhedrin, that many of the members, or at least a certain portion, a minority of the members of the Sanhedrin, our tradition is that Mordechai was part of the Council of 70, even though it did not function formally at that point in Jewish history, that a number of the members of the Sanhedrin lost approval of Mordechai. They stopped respecting him at a certain point. Rabbi Israel. Okay, here you go. Rabbi Israel, right here in this Gemara. Exactly right. The Rov Echav, Lo Lechol Echav. So the Rov, so who was the minority? It was a very prominent minority. It was actually some of the leading scholars within the Jewish people. They had become very disapproving of Mordechai. Can anybody even guess why?
What was this? Before the
story? After the story. By the last Pasuk. The last Pasuk, when everybody else is cheering Mordechai, children are dressing up, others are dancing in the streets, the Sanhedrin is saying, we're not happy. Ruth.
Well, he said last week. He left
Yeah, that's exactly right. Very good. I some people would say, oh, she heard it last week at the end of this year, but I think it's even more impressive that she remembered. So
she's got a very good memory.
Yeah, she remembers everything.
That's great that
Ruth does. Yeah.
Even more the fact that they stayed in Persia, which was perhaps part of the problem of the whole story. That's what he asked before. I mean, Arthur was alluding to that. He's saying the next generation, perhaps, but Mordechai could have picked up and gone.
Could they really?
Very good. Done?
Why not?
In fact, Mordechai...
Like Yosef was able to go back to Egypt.
Ah, the comparison to Yosef.
He had no power.
The plot thickens.
Remember when he went back to bury his father, he had to leave the wives and the children as hostages.
The plot thickens.
Great as they were, they couldn't go home.
See,
another reason that they were upset.
Susan, go ahead.
They felt that it was his fault that the Jews were, that these edicts were written to attack the Jews because he wouldn't bow.
Right.
And they felt that he could have done something to, that it was...
That's another interesting point. So what Susan is saying, maybe this was some latent disapproval, right? One of the most basic questions we have to ask about the Megillah is as follows, just in light of what Susan said. Mordechai is very insistent that Esther not reveal her identity. Ein Esther Magedet et Amavit Moladeta. Esther is not revealing her true identity. Why? Kitziva leha Mordechai asher lo tagid. Mordechai says, no, you know, maybe what we, some people used to say is, shine still, don't make waves. You have to be very prudent about, you know, revealing your identity. On the other hand, Mordechai himself, right? Ki higid lahem asher hu Yehudi. Mordechai is lo yichrav lo yishtachabed. He makes a point of everybody knowing where he stands. So that's one of the interesting elements of Mordechai's character. If he recognized, as Susan was saying, the importance of not making waves, then why was he making so many waves himself? An interesting tension within Mordechai's behavior. So it's really strange that by the end of the Megillah, though, after at least he saves the Jewish people, they would still be angry at him, unless what Ruth is saying is correct, is that here you have some kind of a disapproval of his going into government. Remember what we saw earlier this year for Pirkei Avos? We said, go ahead.
Well, that would be really good, but in section 3, paragraph 3, you have two things. We have one of them where if you get your Torah, you've got Torah and government, and then if you study Torah, you don't have to worry about government.
Oh, right. Malach dan nasesa al yidei acher. Right. That we have in the Gemara in Brachos. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that, and in Menachos too. Lamed hei in Brachos and Sadi tes in Menachos. But we did have Ehov es hamalachos snas harabanos. You should hate either the rabbinate, some people are very machmir about this, or you should hate, you know, not to accrue power to yourself. You shouldn't aggregate power. So there is a hesitance and a reticence on the part of Chazal to get involved with government. Why? They say, She'ein mekarvin lo la'adam, this is what we saw, ela letzorach atzman. They only use people. And then when you're no longer serving their purposes, they discard you. So there's a little bit of a hesitance in terms of getting involved in government to begin with.
When was he in the Sanhedrin?
Right. So the question is, did Sanhedrin really even exist? It's a very interesting topic. The Gemara, the classical source for this, sort of beyond the purview of this year, is if you look in the Gemara Menachos on Daf Samachay, the Gemara Menachos seems to make the claim that Mordechai was in the Sanhedrin.
But from which, after the first place?
Right, oh yeah. This is just after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. The Sanhedrin really wasn't functioning, so to speak, in its classical... For the Sanhedrin to function, the rule is that it actually has to be in what's called the Lishkat HaGazit, which is a certain location on Mount Moriah, on Har HaMoriah. So whether it was like a formal or quasi-formal Sanhedrin, we're not really sure. But it says that Mordechai was at least somebody who was considered of the ilk of being in the Sanhedrin. Yeah.
And you have the same thing after the second temple.
Right.
That there was a Sanhedrin, 60, 70 years after the...
Right, even though it stopped its function. The Gemara says that it no longer was able to adjudicate certain kinds of cases, like capital cases, but at least...
It was in the Sanhedrin after the first of the...
After the Korban Bias. If
he remained in the Sanhedrin.
If even we can claim that it existed.
Right.
But that's something.
When was he exiled?
Mordechai? Anybody know? This is a pasuk that we have in the Megillah. We say, Ki Mordechai Hayudi, Mordechai, there was an issue, Diyayab, Shushan, Habira, Shmo Mordechai, and then he gives his whole lineage, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, Yishimini, Asher Haglam Yerushalayim, who was exiled from Jerusalem, Im Hagola, Asher Haglata, Im Yechonia Melech Yehuda. When was the Gola of Yechonyahu? 11 years before the final Gola, 11 years before the Galus of Tzidkiyah.
So
597, yeah, around the year 600 before the Common Era is when he was Nigla. Yeah. So then, the Gemara goes on to say as follows. Again, so we learn that there is a whole faction of the Jewish people, prominent Jews, who lost faith in Mordechai. Amar of Yosef, why is this? Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos. This is the line that has been vexing me since 8th grade. Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos. I read it again. Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos. Talmud Torah is greater than saving lives. In other words, we're not denying that Mordechai going into the government saved lives, saved many lives. But nonetheless, this group in the Sanhedrin apparently felt that Torah study, that Mordechai dedicating himself to Torah study was much more important than hatzalas nefashos, than saving lives. How do we know? What's their proof text? As follows. Tamei Ikara, because to begin with, before Mordechai had taken on the government position, chashiv le Mordechai basar arba. Mordechai is thought of as number 5. Basar Abba means after 4. So he was batting 5th in the lineup. Okay, 5th is an important place in the lineup. It's right after the cleanup hitter. There are major RBI opportunities there. Ulevasov, but then Basar Chamisha. Then he got demoted in the lineup from 5th to 6th. Okay, 6th place hitter. That's already something else. How do we know? The Pasuk says in Ezra, Me'ikara Ksiv, Asher Ba'u im Zerubbabel. The following people came with Zerubbabel back from Persia to Yerushalayim. This is what Arthur and Joseph were talking about before in terms of Mordechai going to Israel. So Zerubbabel leaves Persia, and he takes about 40,000 Jews with him, according to the count, about 42,000, actually, in the count in Sefer Ezra. And the most prominent people to go with him were Yeshua, Nehemiah, Saria, Ralia, and then Mordechai Bilshan. Mordechai Bilshan is Mordechai's long name. Okay, I don't know, is your son's middle name Bilshan? No, they dropped it. Most people drop it. Okay, Bilshan, it's an underrated middle name. Okay, Mordechai Bilshan.
Very underrated.
Very underrated. Very underrated, yeah. Ulevasov, but then later it says, so there if you count the names, Mordechai is the 5th one, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Saria, Ralia, Mordechai Bilshan, he's number 5. And then in Sefer Nehemiah, when they present the same story, they reverse the order. They say, who came with Zerubbabel? Yeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Ramya, Nachmani, and then Mordechai Bilshan. So we don't have to worry about the intervening names, but all of a sudden Mordechai is not as important. Rashi explains what the Gemara is saying, as we've said the whole time. So Rashi writes, Mei Ikara, originally, Bimei Koresh, this is what Arthur mentioned, in the days of Cyrus, Kisha'ala Zerubbabel min Hagolah, Zerubbabel went up from Persia, what's now Iran, to Israel, Umordechai Imo, V'nimnu b'Sefer Ezra, and all the people who went on Aliyah were listed in Sefer Ezra, and then Esrim v'arba shana haya bein minyan l'minyan, b'mei koresh l'daryavish ha'achron, 24 years elapsed before this story was rewritten up in Nehemiah. Ulefisha Naase Mordechai Sar Bentayim, since Mordechai had become a government official in the intervening 24 years, Yarad Mechashibuso Etzel Chachamim. He lost his Chashivus. Anybody know what Chashivus is or Chashivut? Importance, right. Respect. Yeah. Etzel Chachamim. He became somehow less respected. Because he became a tsar. Now, the Gemara is not denying. The Gemara is not, this is a very perplexing Gemara. The Gemara is not denying that Mordechai was saving lives by doing what he did. It says that he was matzil nefashos, which we can understand. Nobody else could have done the job. Nobody else was getting that job besides Mordechai. I don't think it's fair to say somebody else could have gone in and become, you know, a government official. I don't think any other Jew...
Well, Mordechai sounds better than Miguel.
What's that?
Esther.
Right, that somebody else would have taken, but we don't know that somebody else could have kept the job in government afterwards. You know, once the story is over, and Mordechai agrees to become the second in command to Ahasuerush. I think Mordechai was kind of uniquely qualified because he already had an in with the palace. Seems unlikely, at least we don't know of any other Jewish person that could have done that job. And nonetheless, the Gemara is insisting that at least according to a certain vocal minority, Mordechai made the wrong decision. Mordechai should have gone back to his full-time duties as a professor. Should never have taken that leave of absence.
Was Mordechai a Kohen?
Mordechai was not a Kohen. Yeah, he was actually from the tribe of Binyamin.
Because that's the whole problem with the whole group of kings in Israel. That they were...
Right, that's exactly right.
And they should never have been.
They were kind of usurping.
The separation of church and state, so to speak.
Right, so this is a very interesting question. Is there... Right, right. So that's a whole other topic. In fact, we can discuss that at length, whether that would apply in a non... The Pasuk says, what Arthur's referring to is the Pasuk says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda o mechokek mi bein raglav, that there's a prohibition against somebody who's not from the tribe of Judah taking on a position of power. The question is, does this mean any position of power, any government position? Does it mean to become a king? According to the Rambam, it really only means becoming a king. But according to some of the other Rishonim, as Arthur is saying, it might mean anybody taking on a position of power who wasn't from the tribe of Yehuda. But almost according to everybody, it only applies in in the Jewish state. It wouldn't have relevance in diaspora. But it is a very interesting question. But this is a really radical statement, especially in light of, do we generally say that Talmud Torah is more important than saving lives? No. That's exactly right. That what Arthur is saying is that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Es Kol HaTorah Kula. And there are at least 12 Gemaras that say this, but there might be many more. We'll see just a few of the sources. But normally we say that the only things that stand in the way of Pikuach Nefesh are the general. It's a complicated question because it matters what time is it? Is it a time of Shema? Is it in public? Is it in private? What are the intentions of the person who's making you do it? But generally we say, what are the exceptions to Pikuach Nefesh, Docha Es Kol HaTorah Kula? Right, so what Rabbi Schwartz and Simone are saying is true, that generally we have three exceptions. As far as I know, Talmud Torah isn't one of them.
So because of that time period, maybe people stopped studying and you know, what's going on.
So everybody here, Ruth has a very fascinating suggestion to resolve our Gemara. What Ruth is saying is that maybe when the Chachamim said, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos, so if I understand you correctly, you're saying that that wasn't a generic statement meant to be applied in all times, but it was really limited to that particular generation. People were getting away from studying. Right, that is a very, very interesting suggestion. It would be a very radical statement, to be sure, that somehow, because I guess the counter-argument is, you know, it's very hard to study Torah when you're dead. So, you know, we have to... What's that? Right, that's always true. This reminds me of that's a very good point Susan raises. You know, we don't really know. We can never really... I remember I had a professor in college, Professor Pasaglini. And Professor Pasaglini was... He was really almost some kind of an anarchic streak to him. He was really anti-authority in a lot of ways. And he used to talk about why he was opposed to the death penalty. And he always used to say that you know, they tell us that capital punishment is really painless, you know, this lethal injection. And then he would pause for dramatic effect, and he would say, but how do they know? So Ruth is saying... Ruth is saying, you can assume that it's difficult to study Torah when you're dead, but, you know, how do you know?
What was the level of observance in this period of time?
Yeah, that's right, that's a very good question. In fact, Ruth's whole theory about this.
Exactly. I mean,
right, so this is a very, very intriguing theory. You're getting some support, by the way.
Even the fact that they don't have Jewish names. They don't have other Jewish names, it shows that there was assimilation.
Right. The question is whether Mordechai itself might be a non-Jewish name based on...
Well, Esther's a Persian name.
Right, right.
It should be Hadassah.
Ishtar, right.
Right.
So Marduk, right, so, okay. Very good questions are raised. So we have to...
Sounds like they assimilated very quickly.
It sure sounds that way. The Gemara in Megillah says that what was the reason that the Jewish people were subject to this edict to begin with? Rachel's nodding. Sagaciously?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. So what was the reason? Right, exactly. The reason that we do the Eichatrup at the Chelim Mikelim Shonim is that we saw that those Kelim were from where? The Beis HaMikdash. And that the Jewish people, the Gemara comments, and that the Gemara says that the Jewish people willingly participated in the Mishteh of Achashverosh. They were all too happy to get involved and to mingle with the culture, and you can imagine that there were things there going on that shouldn't have been going on. If Achashverosh had the idea that Vashti should come, you know, and as the Gemara is saying, the Pasuk says, V'chetar malchut b'rosha, wearing the crown, and the Gemara says, and only the Keter malchut b'rosha, and nothing else, you can imagine that this was a party, you know, this was a party where they weren't necessarily making a Siyum Hashas, and the Jewish people were participating, so, you know, the Jewish people were assimilated pretty quickly. And yes, and then there's the evidence that their names sort of sounds very Persian. In fact, the other Gemara is saying that Mordechai is really a contraction for Mar Dror, that he is the finest of spices, and Bilshan is from Baal Lashon, that he speaks many languages. But if you don't accept those Gemaras, then it was in fact a sign of assimilation. Yeah.
Well, it seems that the author of the Megillah is spinning it positively by saying Ratzui L'Rovacha. First of all, it didn't have to be there. And second of all, it's not saying Gadol Yehudim B'chelek Mecha Roach, like it's focusing on the Roach who did like him. And secondly, wasn't Mordechai one of the authors of the Megillah?
Sure, yeah.
So he wrote this.
Right, but Tichtov Esther HaMalkah Mordechai HaYudi, unless he was making a shtach of his detractors, and he's like, you know, and I can't even win these people over. So he said, and only, you know, or he was just being intellectually honest that his approval ratings were like, let's say, 60%.
Okay, so even if you're intellectually honest, or he was saying, I understand that there are people in the Sanhedrin who disagree with what I did, but I think I did the right thing, because I'm Mishnah L'Malach, I'm Gadol Yehudim, and I'm recognizing that I'm Ratzui L'Rovacha, but I disagree with you.
Right. Right.
Who were the other authors?
Right. What do we know from the text? It says Vatichtov. We have two authors listed in the Megillah. Vatichtov Esther HaMalkah Bat Avichayil UMordechai HaYudi Et Kol Tokef. That they seem to write all of the events that happened. The Talmud actually records a major debate that happened within the Jewish people. Mordechai and Esther submitted the Megillah to the publishing house. Literally, they submitted the Megillah to the rabbinic establishment of the time, and they asked for it to be incorporated into the books of Tanakh, and they refused. They said, shouldn't go in there, there's nothing that justifies this being included, and then Mordechai and Esther won that battle, as we're going to get back to. So Mordechai and Esther seem to be the authors, and they also had to fight for its inclusion in Tanakh. It wasn't obvious at all that the book of Esther would become the canonical work that it is today. And then we would have had, you know, maybe there wouldn't have been anything in its place. Maybe there would have been another open space. Maybe like for the Hanukkah story. Yeah. Everything could be different.
Well, that there is a book.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not included.
It's not included.
Apocryphal.
Right.
But nobody discusses it.
Nobody discusses it. It all could have been different. I'm saying if the rabbis had won this fight with Mordechai and Esther, maybe, you know, the Hanukkah story could have gotten in.
It's too long.
Or like a few, what's that?
Sefer Maccabim.
It's too long, yeah. Well, there are a few long books in Tanakh.
Well, yeah. Four books of Sefer Maccabim.
Right. Select the greatest hits.
I'm just,
I don't know.
I'm still confused about the chronology.
Go ahead.
After the Korban, how many years after the Korban was he exiled?
Was Mordechai exiled? He was exiled 11 years before the Korban. He was exiled in 597. The Korban, we believe, is in 586.
So he was exiled before. So when was he sitting in the Sanhedrin?
Well, that's what I was trying to say. That there wasn't really an official Sanhedrin at that time. He was just.
It was in something at that point.
Yeah.
And then he was exiled, so he didn't voluntarily leave the Sanhedrin.
Oh no! But when after the whole Purim story is over,
yeah.
So Mordechai gets offered the job to be the vice president, right? Mishnela Melech Ahasuerus, and he accepts it.
Right.
And he could have stopped right then and there and gone back to his full time teaching and learning responsibilities.
Not the Sanhedrin.
What? Well, he could have. Okay. Not the Sanhedrin. He could have been a Rosh Hashiva.
Right.
Could have been right.
There was nothing to do with Sanhedrin. Just he could have. Been
yeah. But then the members of the Sanhedrin were critical of him because they were saying, you know, you should be a Rosh Hashiva. You have a lot of potential.
Every Jew has an opinion about what you should be doing.
Yeah.
But they were in effect critical.
They were very critical, right?
Right. They really were in existence. You can't criticize something if you're not a group.
Right.
You're not in existence.
This is the hard. This is exactly what Arthur and Susan Tseng is.
Like rabbis.
What's that? They were like really good rabbis. They were like all-star rabbis. They were like Sanhedrin quality rabbis. This was not like your garden variety, you know.
In Persia.
Right. Yeah. They were pretty serious guys.
In other words, if there was a Sanhedrin, it would be.
Bingo. That's the way that I like to think about it. Even though we call them the Sanhedrin, the Gemara just says Mixas Sanhedrin. They weren't really functioning as Sanhedrin. They were kind of like the ceremonial Sanhedrin at that point. So what Arthur, just a second, what Arthur and Susan had said is a very good point. It's always particularly ironic to be criticized by people, you know, whose lives you've saved. You know, you always want to say, well, you know, If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't even be here. And the Ibn Ezra actually says that. If you turn the page, the Ibn Ezra makes that comment, you know, in light of the Gemara, it says, V'ratsoy l'rov echav, v'lo l'chol echav. And it says that, you know, and, you know, the Ibn Ezra reads this and says there was obviously a minority of disapproval, and he obviously knows the Gemara's where it says that the Sanhedrin was angry with Mordechai. So the Ibn Ezra comments, ki ein yecholet ba'adam l'ratsos hakol b'avor kines ha'achim. He says it's not possible for somebody to have 100% approval rating. Right? It's not possible. There's always going to be jealousy. There's always going to be bad feelings. Unless of course, you know, if you live in a totalitarian state, the amazing thing is there's always 100% approval ratings. So they always win those votes unanimously.
Irish, but in effect,
no, yeah, no,
everyone
likes
you. You're not a good leader.
Right.
You can't be.
Right. So he's saying that Mordechai, you know, it wasn't really his fault. He's really, Ibn Ezra is taking Mordechai's side, and he's saying the Sanhedrin, you know, they were kinas ha'achim. They were just upset that Mordechai got all the limelight. But really, what he did was absolutely correct. And presumably, he deflects the Gemara, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos. He says it's not true. Yeah, we had a question?
No, I was just
okay.
Going back on the
A 1,000%. So let's hold on to that for 1 minute. Again, in other words, what the project might be is to reconcile, say, no, when the rabbis say here, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos, that term is used very precisely. That Hatzalas Nefashos might be different than Pikuach Nefesh, in the sense that Hatzalas Nefashos might be an overarching endeavor that will ultimately, in the long term, lead to saving Jewish lives, or saving lives in general. But Pikuach Nefesh is an urgent need. In other words, there's somebody's life hanging in the balance presently that needs to be saved. That might be a valid distinction. Yeah, Naomi, did you have a question?
I was going to say, you know, it's somewhat similar like when Lieberman ran for vice president.
Right.
I mean, one could oppose it just on the grounds you don't want a Jew in such a high position. It's not good for the Jews.
Right. I found that was a generational thing.
That's a ghetto mentality. Absolutely what it is. You're like a barber, it's not that you do something wrong and all the time. I mean, really, it's very ghettoish.
But there's that's like the...
That you won't know until later. Yeah, but they have that fear.
It's oftentimes a generational thing. Like, I think the previous generations, to a certain extent, did have that attitude that, you know, a Jew in power becomes an easy target. But, I mean, you know, like, it's the old adage of, do you play to win or play not to lose? So the play to win people will say, you know, get people in power, and, you know, the play not to lose people will say, you know...
But that could have been what is involved here, too.
Right, exactly right.
It's not exactly saving lives, it's just the idea of you don't put a Jew in a foreign country ahead of it.
Though the formulation of the Gemara, again, seems to be that it was morally a wrong decision on his part, because Talmud Torah somehow takes precedence to saving lives. In other words, it wasn't even a practical consideration or a political consideration. What makes this Gemara so troubling and so startling is that the Gemara seems to imply that for somehow, some way, Talmud Torah is more important than saving lives. What was being suggested was that actually Pikuach Nefesh and Hatzalas Nefashos might be different. And that's actually something that I think is worth thinking about. We'll skip over the next source, the Pirkei. Yes, go ahead, Tova.
I've seen what you learned so much at the Pikuach Nefesh, but wanting to go back to be just doing for Yadut, not to do for the whole all the nations. And that's what they were upset with.
That they said he should go work in like a communal nonprofit, like the AJC or something, but don't go work for the government.
Joint,
right?
Whatever.
Well,
okay.
but I mean,
be more involved just with Jewish love back.
Well, but they are saying, right? I mean, they are saying Gadol Talmud Torah. It almost sounds like they're saying to go back to learning.
Okay, that's it. If you are vice president, you obviously don't have time to do it. Learning, and that was also...
But you're saying if he became an administrator at a non-profit organization, you know, he could have, you know, morning
sitter. Or just get out and learn. Not
oh yeah, that's what we're talking about, going back to learning.
I think they wanted, because also they were afraid for the rest of the Jewish community, because here he was Chacham, he was learning, he was part of the Sanhedrin.
Right.
If the people, they had enough intermarriage and enough other things there, because they changed their names, So they wanted the litter to be brought back to show this, because if the litter becomes with the rest of the government, with the rest of the nation, it gives an okay life.
100%. I think that goes back. That goes back to what Ruth was saying before. Ruth had mentioned that maybe in that particular generation, when there were, you know, was a particularly grave risk of assimilation. Again, the Jewish people had not been steeled through 2,000 years of diaspora at that point. Right? The Jews. This is a crisis. The Jewish people are in crisis mode. The question is, will the Jewish people, you know, survive this kind of exile at all? And there's no question that maybe there is like a reactionary impulse, like we have to become very insular. And if Mordechai himself would go into the secular authority, that somehow would legitimate the enterprise.
Right.
I think what Tova is saying works very nicely with what Ruth said, that this became a generational statement. I certainly think that's a valid. I think that's a valid approach. I think it's a difficult read in the Gemara for technical reasons. So we can talk about that after, because the Gemara seems to. I make a statement in a I would call it an ahistorical way, or basically that to use a fancy term, in an axiological way, that somehow morally there's a superiority, and not just based on that generation, but I think nonetheless it's a valid approach. Just to get a few sources on the record which have our normal hierarchy, I brought two Gemaras, but you could have brought the Gemara in Avodah Zarah or Sanhedrin or Megillah, Daf Gimel. There are numerous Gemaras which make it perfectly clear that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Talmud Torah, that Pikuach Nefesh supersedes Talmud Torah. We'll just read one line for the record here, and that's the last line on the page. But, you know, the other sources are, you know, you could get there in many different ways. So the line in the Gemara Ksuvo says, quite simply, Amar Mar, Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh. Nothing stands in the way of saving a life. Ella avodas kochavim, right? Worshipping idols. Giloy arayos, immorality, sexual immorality. Ushvichos damim bilvad, and bloodshed itself. So there's nothing about, you know, bittul Talmud Torah, about decrease of Talmud Torah on that list. And this is the classical approach, obviously with many qualifications. And as we mentioned before, shas hashmad. Bifar Hase Bitsina, Chil Hashem. But that's clear. Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh. Now, here comes the fun part. Okay, now we really get rolling. The Me'iri, Rabbi Nachum ben Meir, 14th century Provence. So he read the Gemara that we spoke about in Megillah, the Gemara which says that Mordechai made the wrong decision. Mordechai should have gone back to the yeshiva, and he should have, you know, forgotten the importance of Hatzalas Nefashos. So he reads the Gemara, and if you see, just go down to he quotes the whole Gemara, and then the Me'iri writes. Okay, this is the bolded part. Okay, so he says, you know, after finishing to read the Gemara, now he gives you his own one-liner. Halamata, so you learn from this Gemara, says the Me'iri, clearly with a smile on his face. I would have loved to see him actually write this. Halamata, Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei Talmud Torah. There is nothing that stands in the way of Talmud Torah. What Gemara is the Me'iri quoting, but twisting in a Purim kind of way?
Kodesh Mamish, not.
What's that?
Didn't reach the highest Kodesh Mamish.
The Me'iri didn't reach the highest level? Some have said that. I'm a big fan of Me'iri personally. If you go back to the Gemara in Ksuvos, Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei pikuach nefesh. The general hierarchy is nothing stands in the way of pikuach nefesh except these three. So the Me'iri is taking that Gemara and he's fiddling with it based on our Gemara. He says, Ah, halamata ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei Talmud Torah. Because our Gemara says that, you know, the other Gemara said that pikuach nefesh was highest on the totem pole. Our Gemara comes and says, "Is gadol Talmud Torah mehatzalas nefashos?" So now he says, "Ah, so if you put the two Gemaras together, that pikuach nefesh trumps everything else." And now our Gemara says, "Talmud Torah trumps pikuach nefesh." Then we get a new Gemara, Masachas Me'iri, Halamata, Ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei Talmud Torah. And then he quotes a pasuk, very nice pasuk, Na'im Zmiros Yisrael, Ashrei Tmimei Derech, Ahochem B'Torah Hashem. Praiseworthy are those who follow the Torah of Hashem. So the Meiri just furthers the question, because the Meiri is obviously sensitive to the other Gemaras, the classical Gemaras, the Gemaras which say clearly that Pikuach Nefesh has to take precedence over Talmud Torah. So, you know, the question is I think very much in place. Any questions or comments up until this point before we begin to bring it together?
Do you think he was really making a play on this whole thing?
Yeah, definitely. The Meiri, right. The Meiri and the Ramban are the two most likely to do that. The Meiri and the Ramban, if you don't stay on guard, they'll catch you by quoting a Gemara and twisting it a little bit. You got to stay on top of that. Now the Meiri is a little troublemaker in that way. Yeah, 100%. He knows the Gemara. Yeah, it's hard to get a Gemara by the Meiri. So what could the Gemara Megillah mean? So I'll just tell a little story about my, again, as I've referenced a few times, my very troubled and fraught relationship with this Gemara, which has now gone on for quite some time. So when I was, I told you my first encounter was in eighth grade. So then my year after high school, I was learning in Israel at Gush, and I thought that was my big chance, because there are lots of really big scholars there. So one night, it was getting close to Purim, I decided I'm going to ask. And there was a guy there, a very quiet, scholarly fellow, who's like a classical pianist. Very few people know about that. His name is Rebbe Eliakim Krombein.
He's a good what?
Krombein. Yeah. So he's a very, very fine, quiet person. He knows all of Talmud, and he also, he's a very thoughtful person, and he also happens to be a classical pianist. The piano part doesn't relate. It's just an interesting vignette about him. So I asked him, he's a very quiet person, so I asked him about this Gemara. How can the Gemara say that Talmud Torah is more important than saving lives? You know, when we have a million and one other Gemaras which suggest otherwise, and, you know, it can't even be true. I mean, if you think about it, you have to be, I was assuming, not like Susan said, I was assuming that you have to be alive to learn, right? So that if you have to be alive when to learn, so then it doesn't even make any sense, because, as the Gemara says about Shabbos, you know, violate one Shabbos so that you can observe many other Shabbosim. Chilal Shabbos Achas, Kedei Shetishmor Shabbosos Harbe. So I said, you know, it's really in the interest of Talmud Torah to live now, because that way you'll be able to learn tomorrow. You know, so even from a Talmud Torah standpoint, it's ideal to stay. So I asked him the question. And he's a very humble man, so he kind of made it seem like he hadn't thought about the question before, but he obviously had. And he just kind of sat there for 20 minutes, and he didn't say anything. And I didn't even know if he was still thinking about the question. So it's really awkward, because I was standing there, and I didn't want to just like walk away. And the other time I was like, I felt like I was wasting his time. So I just kind of was sitting there next to him, and he's gone for 20 minutes, and I'm just sitting there next to him for 20 minutes. And but it turned out he was thinking about the question the whole time. But you have to, but put yourself in my shoes, around like minute 14. What do you do?
I don't know.
It's a very unusual situation. Do you walk away? So I just kind of sat there. You know, I didn't want to walk away. It'd be rude. I mean, so anyway, thank God. After about 20 minutes, he looks at me and he says, he's originally from America. Otherwise, he would have said it in Hebrew. He's originally from America. He went to the Rav. And then he said, it's very difficult, Gemara. And that was all I got. But, so I don't know that we're... No, yeah, I think he thought about it before also. It's very difficult, Gemara. So, I don't know if we'll come up with a satisfactory answer, but we already got one direction from Ruth and Arthur and Naomi and Tova, if you put it all together, which was that it was specifically in that generation when assimilation was such a threat, because the Jewish people had never been in Galus before since they came into the land of Israel. That certainly might be one approach.
But what was the influence there? Remember, they were only there for 70 years.
70 years.
It's a short period of time.
Right.
That there was so... And this didn't take place at the end of that 70
right.
years.
They'd only been there for about 20 years
at
this point.
They were so overwhelmed by the culture there. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
It took many more years here in America.
Right. Well, it depends. I mean, some people say, you know, if you read, I remember I read, you know, a couple books about that first generation immigration to the Lower East Side, and they say that within, you know, the next generation already, yeah.
Some people got off the boat.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Maybe we can learn about Rabbi Yossi. Maybe there's something about him.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. In other words, that we don't have the records of the members of those Sanhedrin who were critical of Mordechai. So the best address to go to would be Rav Yosef, because Rav Yosef is the author of the statement, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoter Mi'atzalos Nefashos. Maybe he was a really strong proponent of Talmud Torah. But then again, most of the Chachamim are, and they still agree that saving a life takes precedence. So, for what it's worth, I think the question probably will always be better than the answer, but for what it's worth, this is my spin. Take it or leave it.
Go ahead. Sorry. It says Gadol Talmud Torah. Why the word Yoter seems extraneous there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just.
So I thought that
actually say Gadol Talmud Torah me.
Very good to you. Very good insight. So the way that I understand that is, you know, with recognition of the importance of Hatzalat Nefashot, that as great as Hatzalat Nefashot is, Talmud Torah is still greater. In other words, Gadol Talmud Torah, even Yoter Mi Hatzalat Nefashot. In other words, there's this recognition that Hatzalat Nefashot is. So the question is Mordechai really the first Mordechai that we have in Tanakh? That's a funny question. Hey, how'd you know?
Because the people of Megillah are always compared to Yosef.
Yeah, so what's the connection between Mordechai and Yosef?
Well, Yosef also studied, and then his father, and then he went into government.
Second in command.
And like a lot of terms in the Megillah, and ring, and stuff, things that are very similar.
Right, here we have these descendants of Rachel, Yosef, and we know Mordechai comes from the family, and they become the second person, but they're really, in a way, the most important person, because like Arthur said at the beginning, Achashverosh is kind of just like taking orders. And what's the symbol of their power? The Tabat, and the Tabat goes from Paro to Yosef. We know when Yosef is made, and it's an unlikely, you know, rags-to-riches story, right? Yosef comes out of the jail, and he becomes put into second-in-command, and Mordechai goes from death row to second-in-command, and it's all through the Tabat. And here we have... Let's build even more.
And Yosef was also only kind of
difficulty with his brothers. Exactly right.
And I don't know if Paro even knew that Yosef was Jewish.
Right, they knew that he was. All he knew was Inar Evet Ivri. He didn't know what that meant exactly.
The same thing as Achashverosh didn't even know his wife was Jewish either. I mean, it's the same sort of relationship.
The identity, it's another connection. The identity is concealed, at least for some time. Any other elements? So I think the comparisons are. So what's the whole point of the question that we have to ask ourselves? Yeah, it does seem that Mordechai and Yosef are kind of these figures that come from the most unlikely place into the position of second in command, and they have a tremendous influence not only on the Jewish people in terms of saving the Jewish people from different situations. Yosef saves the Jewish people, the nascent Jewish people, from famine. Mordechai saves them, with Esther's help, from the Gezerah. And the question becomes, what exactly is the end of the Yosef story? Does it have a happy ending? Does it have a sad ending? What happens to the first parak of Sefer Shemot to Yosef? Does his legacy...
No, there was a king who
knew not. Yeah, that's very true. Right. Susan's saying is exactly right. Vayakal melech hadash al Mitzrayim, asher lo yada es Yosef. It's all for the moment. Exactly right. He saves them for a minute, and he takes care of it, but then the Jewish people are in the next crisis. It's not a famine, but now Paro wants to destroy them. So Yosef is kind of the background to the Mordechai story. Here we have Mordechai. I like it. Here's a Mordechai, son of Yosef. And here, the whole argument I'm trying to make is that Mordechai is the son of Yosef in the conceptual sense. So now we go back to our original question.
That's what he thought of.
What's that?
When he named him.
It was all just in preparation for this year. Right. Right.
Oh, really?
Another interesting theory ruined by a fact. Okay. So now we go back and we see the original question about is the Megillah a happy ending or a sad ending? So I think it's both. We have the elements of the saving of the Jewish people, but I think that what Perek Yud in the Megillah is really doing is trying to show how exactly what happened to Yosef in terms of Yosef's legacy and his memory slowly starting to fade out, and the Jewish people having to suffer some more because they were not in their own land and they weren't in a position of power. They didn't have their own malchus, but because they were in Galus and subject to the king. So yes, they were saved for a moment, but not necessarily in a permanent way. Vayasem ha-melech Ahashverosh mas al ha-aretz v'iyei hayam. Are we tax historians? Maybe some of us are tax historians of ancient tax practices in the Persian Empire, but I think that everything that's in the Megillah is there for everybody. So we know that Ahasuerus reasserts himself. The Jewish people are subject to Ahasuerus, as the Gemara that we're going to go see goes on to say, we're still servants of Ahasuerus. V'chol ma'asei tokvo gvurato, and Ahasuerus' grandeur is written, so and so forth. And then Ki Mordechai Hayudi, and that's where we get V'ratzoi l'robechav. In other words, the 10th parak of Esther is already introducing that, you know what, life went on, and life went on in Galus and under Ahasuerus and subject to his mas, his taxes, his ma'asei tokfo gvurato. It's very much the story shifting to Ahasuerus. And now we have the following medrash. Keep in mind what Chazal said about Mordechai, that Mordechai choosing to go into the government was not the ideal, that he should have gone back to Torah study. So what does this mean? So if you take a look at the Medrash here, this is Breshit Rabati, Parshat Miketz, Nashani Elokim, I just have 5 more minutes or so, Amar Rav Huna, Betchila Haya Yosef, Yosef Ve'osek B'Torah Yomam V'Laila. When Yosef first started in Egypt, he used to sit and learn day and night. Shenemar Vayaro Donav Ki Hashem Ito. His master saw that Hashem was with him, Malachesh V'Nechnas, Malachesh V'Yotze, right, that he was always whispering, he was always learning Torah quietly by himself. But in the end, he forgot his Torah, and that's what he means when he names Menashe, Kinashani Elokim et Kol Amali, Zo Torah, this is the Torah that Yosef forgot. That Yosef, after he became acclimated to life in Egypt, after he joined the government, Yosef, another now parallel with Mordechai, Yosef begins to forget his learning. And Chazal, you know, are critical of it. And then here again with Mordechai, Chazal are saying, you know, he went down in the lineup. We said he went down from the 5th place to the 6th place. He wasn't they weren't considering him as great a scholar anymore. So what is all this about? Did Mordechai make the wrong decision? So my argument is no. Mordechai did not make the wrong decision. And we'll conclude with this Gemara, and then I'll tell you why I think that. So the Gemara says, in Masachas Megillah, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abin, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. The Gemara's question is, you know, how much rejoicing should we do on Purim? Mame Abdus L'Cheirus, Amrinan Shira. When it comes to Pesach, when we celebrate going from slavery to freedom, we say Shira. Mimisa L'Chaim on Purim, when we celebrate going from literally death to life, Lo Kol Shekein, shouldn't we certainly celebrate? And Ihachi, if this is so, Hallel Nami Nema. Why don't we say Hallel on a Purim? So the first answer the Gemara gives is Lefi She'ein Omrim Hallel Al Neis Shebechutz La'aretz. We don't say Hallel on a miracle that happens in Chutz La'aretz. Something about the nature of Chutz La'aretz means that we can't really say a full Hallel. Hallelu Avdei Hashem, as the Gemara says, V'lo Avdei Paro. Yes, we can say Shira when we leave Egypt because we know we're not going to serve Paro anymore. Elahacha, but in the case of Purim, and this is the critical line, think about the taxes that we read about in Perek Yud, Hallelu Avdei Hashem, V'lo Avdei Ahasuerus, can we really say that we're no longer servants of Ahasuerus? Akati Avdei Ahasuerus Anan. We still serve Ahasuerus. We're still... We can't say a full Shira. We can't say a full Hallel because it's Chutz La'aretz. It's not a complete salvation. It's just salvation in this generation. But Akati Avdei Ahasuerus Anan, when we get around to Perek Yud, Ahasuerus is still king. We're not really in charge. And when we get to the next generation, they won't even remember Yosef. It was just temporary. And that's the tragedy of Galus. That's the constant precarious state of the Jew. Okay. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Just this is the last line in that Gemara. We'll just skip the intervening lines in the interest of time. Nevua shehutzricha ledoros nechteva, v'shalo hutzricha lo nechteva. Why was Esther really included in the 24 books of Tanakh? Because it was deemed nevua shehutzricha ledoros. It was a type of nevua that was needed for generations. I would argue, what does it mean that the Esther, that Miguel's Esther was needed for generations? That it's a template. It's the story of Yosef, and it's the story of Mordechai. It's the same story over and over. It's the story of temporary salvation, but still, Akati Abde Achashverosh Anan, or as Susan said, right, Vayakom Melech Hadash, Asher Lo Zacharet Yosef, it's always a salvation, but one that is not a complete geula. And therefore, we don't say a full hallel, and therefore we don't say a full hallel on Purim. So now to bring it all together, maybe this is what the Gemara had in mind, maybe. When it said, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mehatzalat Nefasho. Not that Mordechai made the wrong decision. Mordechai definitely made the right decision. We know that all the other Gemaras, and we know that it's true that Pikuach Nefesh is the most important principle. But maybe what the Gemara is saying wasn't so much an accusation, more like it was a sigh of regret. That how great would it be if, you know, we had the liberty and the luxury of focusing on our moral, ethical, and spiritual development, which is what Talmud Torah is really all about. But the tragedy of Galus is that our Mordechais, our people who are really, you know, have distinguished themselves and excel in Talmud Torah, that they have to constantly make those kinds of sacrifices, the same ones that Yosef did, the same way that Mordechai did, to meet the needs of the hour and to save the Jewish people. Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mehatzalas Nefashos, that in a perfect and ideal world, we wouldn't have to worry about the constant challenge of Hatzalas Nefashos, of having to save lives. And Mordechai certainly made the right decision. But how much better would it have been if Mordechai was able to dedicate himself, and all of us, to dedicate ourselves to our continued development as Jews, as people, as Talmidei Chachamim, to grow in Torah learning, instead of having to deal with what I would call putting out the fires of every generation in Galus. Yosef was the same story. Mordechai is the same story. And it's a story that repeats itself over and over again. And this is what I call the tragic element of Purim. And this is what the Megillah ends off with. That yes, it was important. That exactly right. That's what we mean by Nevuah Shehutzra Chaladoros. The Megillah becomes the paradigm for all of Galus. That yes, we should and we can celebrate the triumphs of the moment and the generational successes when we do overcome a particular challenge, but we have to be aware that it's only temporary. That the whole Dor Vador, Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloseinu, that you know what? Even though we'll have a Yeshua in one generation, in the next generation, we'll need to have another one. And that's the tragedy of Yosef and Mordechai, and in every generation, people not being able to dedicate themselves to, you know, the pursuits of you know, developing one's character and really having to deal with the real life problems of the Jewish people. And with, and I just would conclude with the fact, you know, it's often noted that that Purim and the Megillah in particular, Hashem is always in the background. You know, the Megillah doesn't mention Hashem's name, which is one of the observations that people make. And on the one hand, this is something we can be very proud of in the sense that Hashem works through everyday miracles, but that's also a reflection of the fact that we say that that Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Asher Inei Hashem Elokecha Ba, Mereshit Shana Ve'ad Acharit Shana, that in Eretz Yisrael, the sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sense of Shechina, and walking in God's shadow is heightened there, and that part of Hashem's name not appearing in the Megillah, and this is, I think, what Arthur and Rabbi Schwartz were alluding to before, is that the Jewish people had kind of their Hashem awareness, if we could call it that, their Hashem awareness quotient had gone down. They had already begun to sort of lose that focus, and Hashem's name really can't appear in the Megillah. They didn't perceive him in a clear way. It was really, you know, even from their perspective, he was operating at best behind the scenes. And that's part of the story. I think this is what Tova and Ruth and Naomi were all suggesting, that generation, there was a tremendous risk. And that's part of the tragedy of Galus, is this cycle of crisis and salvation. Like just to borrow Arthur's terms, because I think it's an apt ending, that's a cycle that never ends. But nonetheless, even though we spoke about the tragic dimension of Purim, the cycle tonight, I wish you a happy Purim. Try not to focus on the tragic element too much. You've been Yotzei the tragic element. But, you know, the Rav used to say that the Purim had this dialectic of it being a very happy day and a tragic day, and that we're supposed to, you know, sort of finish thinking about the we're supposed to think about the tragedy every year with Tanis Esther. And that's Purim is really a two-day holiday. There's Tanis Esther and then there's Purim. And on Tanis Esther, you think about the tragic element that Akati Abde Achashverosh Anan, that we still have to serve Achashverosh and we still have to pay his taxes, literal and metaphorical. And then when you move on to Purim, we focus on the Yeshua, on the salvation. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at. So if you want to be morbid, you can, you know, you have Tanis Esther for that.
Right.
Knock yourself out. All right.